The following is rated R. It contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody. It is 8:30, and thanks for joining us for the Walking Dead online viewing party. It is Sunday, the 10th of March, 2019. I'm host Casey Shapiro on blogtalkradio.com via our host, NDB Media. Tonight's show contains spoiler material up through the last episode, and possible content from any current AMC official promo materials. Typically, we start our show about a half hour before the new episode airs live each week with recap from the previous episode and discussion of what is to come tonight. At 9 p.m., we'll go dark or mute and watch the new episode together, then give episode ratings from 1 to 10 and commentary during the commercial breaks. We will also give our listeners trivia on the show, as well as the cast and crew, including bios, birthdays, and more. Our show is spoiler and comic free, so please don't discuss either any spoilers or stuff from the comics in the chat room or on the air. We prefer our discussions, reactions, and comments to be just about what we know from the show presented. I'm going to check in the chat room real quick. A couple minutes ago, I was alone. Miss Joan has joined us, so I will pause here to thank her for coming. Always appreciate our regulars coming into the chat room to keep me company and help me out with the discussions and so forth. If you guys want to be part of that, feel free to call in. You can speak with the host at 914-338-0314. Anytime during the show, but I encourage you, especially between 8:30 to 9 p.m., if you do call during the live show, you will be screened and muted until the commercial break when we can chat on the air. If the phones are not really your thing, feel free to join us in the live chat room, and you can listen to the show real time, as well as download the episode after the fact, and we post links to that, usually on Facebook page and Twitter. My Twitter, so feel free to share them. If you're unable to join us for the show in real time this evening, you can still go to the link to each episode and download the broadcast later as an MP3 podcast for listening when you have time. So click on the cloud-shaped white icon at the top right of the page when you click the link, and you can also download this and prior episodes on iTunes. You should be able to find them by our various hashtags. So welcome to Season 9, Episode 13 of The Walking Dead. Tonight's episode is entitled Choke Point. We have three episodes left in Season 9 after tonight. The official AMC synopsis goes, Daryl's daring rescue mission forces Alpha to unleash a group of her own to retrieve what belongs to her, even if the price is paid in blood. The kingdom's plans to reunite the communities is put in jeopardy. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, let's see if Joan has any commentary. Oh, she wasn't sure if she was going to make it, but glad she is here now. Let me know if you have any commentary to share with our listeners, and I will be happy to pause and get into that part. So for right now, typically after I give you the synopsis, I have other articles that give extended synopses or commentary on tonight's episode, so I will read those to you guys next. The first one that I have, it's from fansided.com. It was written this morning. And the title is actually The Walking Dead Season 9, Episode 13, Live Stream Watch Online. But I found that this post actually had some commentary that I wanted to share with you guys. So fansided.com. This was written by Nir Rajev, who is one of their newer writers about the show. I have not read too many of his things, maybe three or four of his posts. But let me go down here. Okay. So, The Walking Dead continues on AMC tonight at 9 p.m. with the kingdom receiving a surprise letter for supply ransom. The letter details a toll for road usage around the kingdom ahead of the community fair. There's a live stream link, but there's more commentary that I thought was fun to share. Last week saw Daryl using the Whisperer's own tricks by putting on a walker skin to save Henry. Daryl wanted Henry to leave Lydia behind, but Henry refused to leave without her. Surprisingly, Lydia decided to make an instant decision and escape with Daryl and Henry during the mayhem created by Daryl Shepherded Walkers. Of course, Alpha will know exactly what went down once she notices both Henry and Lydia got away. Expect Alpha and Beta to set the group up for revenge on tonight's edition of The Walking Dead. Then they have the official synopsis, which I've already read you, so we'll skip that part. In the sneak peek for tonight's Walking Dead, and by this they mean the trailer, Ezekiel receives a letter from a group calling themselves the Highwaymen. It's more of a veiled threat for ransom, as they request a toll be paid for using those roads being used around the kingdom, or else. Though the group speculates it might be Savior Leftovers led by Jed, Carol knows better as she took all of them out by herself. A little fire starter action. Ezekiel tells Jerry they couldn't pay the toll ransom even if they wanted to because they barely have supplies to begin with. They need the fare or the kingdom will fall. Ezekiel then asks Jerry to gather anybody able to fight to fortify their defenses against this imminent issue. And that is the end of that extended synopsis. Let me check in the chat, and Joan has not added anything yet, so while we're waiting for that, I will go to the next synopsis that I have for you. And this one is from undeadwalking.com, and it was written on March 7th. So it's a couple days older, but that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. So this is by Sarah Beth Pollock, who is a regular writer for undeadwalking.com regarding this show. And she says, every action has consequences, and that's possibly more true in the middle of an apocalypse than anywhere else. Daryl and Connie rescued Henry and Lydia in The Walking Dead Guardians, that was last week's episode, but that will cost them. This week's all-new episode features the repercussions of those actions, and the price could be higher than anyone intended. Meanwhile, over at the kingdom, the preparations for the fair are underway. Okay, and this is commentary for me. I don't know if it's just me, but raise your hand if you think this really is kind of starting to sound like a Ren fair, the way that they're talking about it and everything. And I know that the whole stakes at stake here, they're a little more serious than that, so I'm having a little fun with it. And I don't mean to make light of that, but I keep thinking it's like a Renaissance fair almost because of Ezekiel's grand talking and all of this kind of thing. And, you know, they have the banners and they have the statue memorial to Shiva and so forth. So an unexpected disruption comes along that could cause some trouble for people trying to attend. A group of people called the Highwaymen were mentioned in the sneak peek. And in the scene, they're kind of like the troll who guards the bridge in Three Billy Goats Gruff. They've declared that the roads to the kingdom belong to them, and they expect a toll from anyone hoping to pass. Again, episode description. Again, we've done this, so we're skipping. And then they say, Alpha isn't going to let Daryl get away with what happened in the Whisperer's camp. Nor will she forget that her daughter escaped. This is only going to cause trouble from here on out, and Alpha isn't playing games. After Choke Point, there are only 3 episodes left in the season. It's hard to believe season 9 went by so fast, but even so, there's plenty of time for things to fall apart. Okay, Sarah Beth, it wasn't that fast. There was a huge gap in there, and we were all pining for almost 4 months over the winter, waiting for it to come back. So that's cute and all, but no. Also, I'm going to put this out to Joan, and you know, feel free to have commentary if you guys have opinions on this. I know most of you are not here, so this would be after the fact, but I'm going to say an unpopular opinion. There are people who always disagree on both sides of most things we say about The Walking Dead, but here's mine. We had so much buildup to the Whispers, and some of which I ignored because we tend to kind of shut our ears and go la 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 when we hear about stuff from the comics, but we did know this was coming, and there's also been a lot of complaints, and we've had 9 years of this, and so the big bad is getting really formulaic, and this has been a problem for a while. You know, basically it was, what random psycho are all these other dipshits falling behind because they seem to be the only people that can keep people alive and help them survive? Are we really kind of saying that you can't be a sane person as much as possible and a decent person as much as possible in this world and get anything done? Because I think that was you know, countering that was the whole point of Rick's group and now the other groups of like mind that they've found. I'm looking over in the chat room and Joan has raised a question. Do I have any theories as to who the Highwaymen might be? I don't know who they are yet except themselves, but I can tell you who they're not because this is not a secret if you've been keeping up with the show. And if you haven't, you shouldn't be listening to me because I totally told you we have spoilers every week. But at any rate, I don't know who they are, but I know that everybody else thinks they're saviors. But the saviors that they could potentially be are the ones that Carol lit up like a dumpster fire a few episodes ago when she was with Henry. So I don't really have any idea exactly how this is going to work. But anyhow, no, I don't. And I haven't really been given any hints. And if they're out there, I haven't been looking for them on purpose because you know how we do with the spoilers. Joan is aware that they're not the saviors that Carol took out. You know, there are some people who miss that, and definitely some of the characters in character are pretending that they don't know. Well, they're not pretending in script, but, you know, whatever. Pardon me just a moment. I need to message the spousal unit and see if it can check on the cable for me because my television is not booting up, in which case I'm not going to be able to watch a show with you guys or else I'm going to have to pop into the other room and do it on the big screen TV in our rec room. All right, so I'm going to try to take care of that in between getting some information for you guys. So that is the end of that summary. Next one I have for you is from comicbook.com, and it just says Walking Dead Season 9, Episode 13, Choke Point. So let me pull that up for you. It is by Brandon Davis, one of their regular writers about this show. And this was written this morning, March 10th. So, official synopsis, which we're skipping. And then also, they mentioned the director and the writers. And we will get to that in a hot minute, but I'm not going to bother doing it twice. So I'll skip over that part because I'm going to give you like extensive profiles on them and other fun stuff. On the heels of a fast-paced episode 9-12, Sunday night's episode will begin right where its predecessor left off, meaning last week. Choke Point will see Daryl Dixon and Connie leading Henry and Lydia away from the Whispers. However, the rescue mission will prove to be tremendously dangerous as Beta is sent to hunt Daryl down. In fact, the showdown between Daryl and Beta has been subject to quite a bit of hype in recent weeks as both Daryl actor Norman Reedus and Beta actor Ryan Hurst have shared their perspectives. Quote, the fight is something to look forward to, Hurst told Insider. Being a huge fan of the show, when I first read it in the script, I was really, really excited. The scope of the fight will be larger than most hand-to-hand bouts seen on AMC's zombie show, Walker Show. Well, you know it's a zombie show, but they don't use that word. Without giving away too much, it's a 3-page fight scene. Well, that's quite a bit as far as scripts go. So it kind of just goes on and on, Hurst said. Norman and I worked on it for a week and a half. It was a lot of fun to put together. On the other side of the episode, King Ezekiel will continue his efforts to unite the communities as a means to help the kingdom become more prosperous. His community is running low on food and resources, so the fair will aim to bring a trade amongst the survivors, allowing each group to benefit. And then it just says, what are your predictions for The Walking Dead 9-13? Do you think Daryl and Beta's fight will live up to the hype? Share your thoughts in the comment section. Well, we can't really do that. So that is that extended commentary. These last two are not necessarily synopses, but they do have discussions about the episode or things that are relevant to the episode. So I wanted to include them now instead of later in the discussion section. All right, so give me just a few seconds. I need to try to see what's going on with the cable, and I will be right back. I appreciate your patience. Okay, 8:45. I appreciate that. I just wanted to see if I could get the spouse to check on why I don't have Walking Dead on my TV yet. We've been doing some cleaning up around the house, and one of the things we need to deal with is our internet connection. It's kind of jerry-rigged in an odd way, because when we bought the house, there were no wires for the cable TV or the phone. They had been stripped out by previous tenants. So anyhow, I have the article pulled up for you guys that I want to read to you real quick. And this one is Three Predictions for the Walking Dead Season 9, Episode 13, Choke Point by Matthew Rudoy, R-U-D-O-Y, also from fansided.com, and this was written this morning. And Matthew says, the Whisperers are ready to unleash an all-out strike while another threat reveals itself to the kingdom in the next episode of The Walking Dead, official synopses which we're skipping. The episode promo teases an epic fight between Daryl and Beta, while the sneak peek provides further insight into the new enemy threatening the kingdom and the fair they so desperately need. Here are predictions for what this means for the upcoming episode. Prediction 1, Beta will defeat Daryl for now. As one of the toughest and most experienced characters on the show, fans know Daryl Dixon as a seasoned and relentless survivor. There are precious few characters who can match Daryl in this capacity, which means the expectation is that he'll defeat Beta in the showdown. Yet, it would be more effective for Beta to actually best Daryl. In doing so, Beta would be firmly cemented as a truly formidable character. A victory for Daryl won't really develop his character all that much, but a victory for Beta would develop him nicely as a legitimate antagonist. Beta won't succeed in killing Daryl, but he'll win the battle against everyone's favorite crossbow-wielding character. And might I add, they did experiment with that with Daryl versus Negan, and they did allow Negan to win for a while, and I think had they not, it would have kind of taken the nuts out of that plot line. So I think that may be a valid observation. That, and I think everyone is eager to see Ryan Hurst have some fun in this role. So I kind of look to that as reasonable. I'm going to pull over to the chat room, and Joan has shared some comments that I want to give you guys, 8:48, so I'm going to get these in here. She says, I don't think it could be any other Savior splinter groups either, since Oceanside took out quite a few as well. I had originally thought it might be Dwight or his long-lost wife, but I don't think that either. And might I add, if you remember, we have had official commentary from AMC strongly hinting that Dwight and Sherry may be merging over to Fear as part of the extended new plotline stuff going on in Season 5. Because we know Morgan had made noises about going back, and then he wasn't. And while he may not be heading back to Virginia, they are going to get back and revive that whole leaving boxes by the road thing that the one trucker was doing. I've forgotten everybody's names now because it's been months, but you know what I'm talking about. The main plot line there where they were leaving things to help people, and he wants to revive that. And I have seen quite a bit of official commentary that leads me to believe that that is going to be the mechanic by which somehow Dwight and Sherry get integrated into Fear. Joan also says, I agree with your take on the formulaic view of villains versus good guys on this show. I'm still waiting for valid argument on why Alpha, as only the most recent bad guy, exerts such influence over followers. You know, I'm going to say something else controversial, and I really don't mean to be an asshole about this, but I don't understand why Alpha is in charge of anything. She really just strikes me as a psycho wine mom. Now, to be fair, my only experience of her prior to this is Lydia's story, and we now have strong reason to believe that at least half, if not most, or even all of that story was bullshit that Lydia made up. So we really don't know how much of that really was Alpha in the beginning. But then I was watching last week's episode again because I was looking for music. And while I was watching it, there was Alpha telling the story to Beta about how Lydia choked on a dry cleaning plastic in the closet when she was 13. And Alpha just stood there. And so obviously from Lydia's age now, this wasn't too long before everything went bad. You know, if you base on how many years it's been in between, she's still a teenager at this point, so it couldn't have been that too long ago before everything went bad. And Alpha was abusive then. So Alpha's telling a story separate from Lydia's story to someone that makes her sound like she's always been kind of like this and really shouldn't have ever had children. I mean, she's kind of broken. So I'm having a real struggle with seeing her as a bad guy of respect. She's got so many damn flaws, and I don't see why people follow her. And, you know, I could kind of understand Negan in that, you know, at least he legitimately would kick the shit out of somebody. But anyway, let me go back, 8:51. Let me try to grab some more of Joan's commentary for you guys to consider. She says, hey, I know, maybe the highwaymen are an evolved group like the ones that Madison took that took out Madison on Fear the Walking Dead. Just kidding. I don't know, but who knows? Polar Bear was a trucker. Thank you, Joan. Yes, that's who I'm thinking of. And The Walking Dead has moved past Fear by several years now, except no, because remember that Morgan went there, and Morgan left just a season-ish ago. So, well, okay. Morgan is still down there, and I don't know if Fear also did the six-year jump. So I don't know if they have done the six-year jump to get them away from being on a simultaneous plot line. And it would kind of make sense if Dwight and Sherry run into them that it was a six-year jump for somebody, because Dwight and Sherry would be in the six-year jump. I don't really know how the time... I really wish they'd stop screwing with the timelines like this. This really made it bad. And I know they had things they were trying to reconcile. I get all that. But they made it really mushy. I don't think it was very clean and very clear. But let me finish Joan's comment. She said, Dwight going to Fear would make it very far-fetched. He shows back up in the original anytime soon. I don't think he's going back to the original. I mean that to be Dwight, but also kind of Morgan at this point. I'm not sure he's going. I don't know why they'd bother to pull him out and then send him back again. I think they just had that plot line in there, and I thought it was dumb. If Morgan thought enough to go away that he walked for 2 years to get away, why the hell would he go back? Dumb. So, you know, I need you guys to understand, I do have mad love for this show, and I've stayed through an awful lot of things that made people leave. Like, Negan, I'm looking at you. So I do have loyalty to it, but, you know, I'm kind of like the kid's sister. I'm still going to tell you when you fuck up, and you guys are kind of fucking up a little bit. You know, still love you. Stop playing with the timelines and be a little more clear how things are supposed to fit together. Don't make us guess so much. That's not very nice. Okay, so that has covered what Joan has added so far. So let me go back to the predictions, and we'll get that out of the way and see what else we can handle before then. So prediction number two, Lydia will reveal her true loyalties. I think that's inevitable. Lydia did her best to make it seem as though she remained loyal to Alpha and the Whisperers, though it remained near impossible to maintain the facade when told to kill Henry. Playing both sides will no longer work for Lydia, though, as the Whisperers clash head-on with Daryl, Connie, and Henry in order to get her back. It's time that she revealed her loyalties have shifted away, pardon my hiccups, from her mother and to the side of Daryl and Henry. This could connect with Beta and Daryl's fight. After Beta defeats Daryl and is on the verge of killing him, beg your pardon. Oh, okay, this is a theory. Okay, I got worried for a minute that they shoved a spoiler in here, but no. This is kind of a, it should go down this way, and the first thing they said is Beta should defeat Daryl. So it's based on that premise, just so we're clear about that. It's not a fact guaranteed in the plot tonight. This is their theory. So after Beta defeats Daryl and is on the verge of killing him, Lydia can step in and save Daryl's life. That action will prove to Alpha and Beta that even if they retrieve Lydia, they've lost her forever. A truth that will make Alpha even more dangerous and unhinged moving forward. I kind of question, because we did not see much of Lydia before they captured her. I question how loyal Lydia has ever been, because if I kind of go back and treat the scenario in the shelter as spurious at best, I'm not sure Alpha was ever a mother that somebody could really be honestly loyal to and not just abused and fearful of, you know, very Stockholm about her mom. Joan has added a couple more comments. But look, Morgan left when Judith was 3 or 4 years old, and now she's like 10 or so. Once again, Fear is a prequel. You know, we know there's a six-year jump, and we do not yet know if Fear Season 5 is going to be in that timeline or whether it's going to go back to being a prequel now that they've got Morgan over there. Joan says, I have way more loyalty to the original at this point. I'm trying to stick with Fear, but have to admit, they started losing me when they nixed Madison. I really didn't like that, and I'm still obsessed with the fact that they have declared her dead and cut the actress loose, but you never see her die. How many times have they used that as a tool? Also remember, speaking of Fear, that Daniel is still running around, although they also said that Troy was going to be back, and that's impossible, so I don't really know how all that's going to work, but we'll get to that discussion later. I don't want to spend too much time on it because we only have 4 minutes, and I actually don't have cable up at the moment. Hold on just a quick second. Pardon me for that. Let's go back to the other prediction and get this in here real quick. I'm going to try to see if I can get the TV done downstairs. Number three, the Highwaymen have history with the Whisperers. And again, prediction, not spoiler. While the Whisperers are the main threat right now, a secondary threat is about to emerge in the form of the Highwaymen, who were teased by the mysterious red symbol in the episode Bounty. And remember, these red symbols were not running around all over the place just a few weeks ago. So this is a new occurrence, not something that's been here this whole time. It may be nature abhors a vacuum, and there's been a guess that when Carol got rid of Jed and those guys, that she may have created the opening they needed. I don't know. But that's not in this article. That's somewhere else. We'll get to it in a bit. This group threatens the kingdom and all those from the other communities who are traveling there for the fair. While very little is known about the Highwaymen at this point, it's plausible that they have history with the Whisperers. What that history is remains to be seen, but it seems like too much of a coincidence for both the Whisperers and the Highwaymen to manifest and begin converging on the communities at the same time. The Highwaymen might have suffered greatly at the hands of the kingdom before and are now demanding resources from the kingdom to strike back against the Whisperers. Only time will tell, but there's a good chance as the two antagonistic groups that they will be connected. All right. And the last one I may not be able to finish before we go live with tonight's episode, but I will get it set up for you. It is from comicbook.com. And The Walking Dead's Chokeholds Are Illegal was a callback to season one. Now, this is from Brandon Davis, but it's from November 2017. So I will be interested to see what commentary comes out later, because this was written before this episode was named, or at least publicly named, possibly when they came up with it. But it's, you know, tonight's episode is called Chokehold. And so there's a whole thing. It's a callback all the way to season one. All right. So I'll start reading it. I may have to pause. When Rick and Daryl decided to exchange a few blows in Sunday's episode of The Walking Dead, the AMC series packed a callback to its first season into the scene. And when they say Sunday's episode of The Walking Dead, they mean the one that was in mid-November of 2017. So that's a couple of seasons ago. After Daryl punches Rick, the characters had themselves a feud which saw a pile of explosives being tossed into a slowly billowing fire. Before they would explode, Daryl would get Rick into a headlock and inflict a chokehold on him until he realized the danger they were both in. After the fight, the two characters put their fight aside in favor of the greater good and their brotherly love for one another. Before parting ways and continuing Rick's plan, Rick would look at Daryl and say, chokeholds are illegal, asshole. The moment was a direct callback to the show's first season when Shane Walsh had to restrain Daryl by putting him in a chokehold as Daryl attempted to fight Rick with a knife. After being taken down, Daryl called out, chokeholds are illegal. With such a thorough history to build on, The Walking Dead has made callouts to previous scenes and dialogues a habit. In Season 7, more dialogue involving Daryl served as a callback to previous seasons, one of which referenced the Blake Glenry. That's actually the whole article. I did manage to get it in. I'm going to go ahead and go mute at this point, and I'll see you guys at the first break. Hopefully I can get a TV up where I can find out when that is. Appreciate your patience. See you in a few minutes. Okay, guys, it's 9:04. Got the TV going on in the other room, so I know that we are on our first commercial break. And we'll go ahead and get those scores up. And Joan and I are both at a 6. And Joan has also said, wow, hearing Beta talk He seems more of a leader than Alpha. He could be leading a religious cult. He almost makes it sound religious in nature. Kind of in a way. I question why Beta lets Alpha lead. She has to be serving a purpose that either he cannot fill or doesn't want to fill. And they appear to be a couple, but it's not typical or normal. You know, nothing pretty much is in this world. But so I'm not really sure exactly what their dynamic is just yet. I have gone ahead and finished that last article about chokeholds are illegal. Funny stuff. So while we have a hot minute in here, I am going to actually go in the other room and unmute the TV. And Joan, I may need your help in knowing when we come back. Because I may not have the ability to monitor that. Come on, TV. Do your thing. There we go. All right, so I know we're in commercials at the moment. So we have the writers and directors for this evening. And we've got three profiles for you, and they're all kind of big. So tonight's director is Liesl Tommy, L-I-E-S-L, Tommy, you know, just like the boy's name. The writers are David Leslie Johnson and Eddie Gazalian. So let me get Liesl's profile up for you guys. And Joan has also said she's leading more towards not wanting to fill that role at her having something he doesn't. Yeah, well, I mean, even she could have the willingness to be in that role so he doesn't have to anyhow. Alrighty, so let me go to the profiles. So Liesl Tommy is a female South African stage and television director, and she has quite an interesting biography and in how she's come to here, because her profile doesn't have a whole lot of things in it, but there's quite a bit that's not on IMDb because she started out as a stage director, which it wouldn't be carried on IMDb. Tommy was born and raised in Fractertown, Cape Town, South Africa during the apartheid era. Her family moved to Massachusetts when she was 15 years old, and she attended Newton North High School. Oh, we are back. I'm going to pause there, and I'll see you guys at break number. .914, and we're at break number two, so let's go ahead and get those scores up. Joan is inching up to 6-5. I'm actually willing to go to 6-5 just because they're setting up the Beta fight with Daryl, and I'm anticipating that's going to be something good. So let's see. Let me go back to my note and continue Liesl Tommy's profile while we have a minute. Let's see. Where did I leave off? While in high school, she found a purpose through theater and made that her main focus. After graduation, she studied acting in London and attended a conservatory program through Trinity Repertory Company in Providence, Rhode Island. While in acting school, she developed an interest in directing, and her teachers gave her the opportunity to direct a show once a year until she graduated. Also Joan has added, and come on, Daryl, you had to see there were more than just five or six in the middle of a herd. Yeah. I don't know how he didn't know that, because they were stalking them to try to get a hold of Henry. But I digress. So Tommy has directed theater all over the United States, including Center Stage in Baltimore, Dallas Theater Center in Dallas, California Shakespeare Theater in San Francisco, Sundance East Africa, Berkeley Repertory Theater in Berkeley, California, and La Jolla Playhouse in La Jolla, California. Tommy has made it a mission of hers to advocate for a more diverse theater experience in her shows. Her 2012 production of Hamlet at California Shakespeare Theater featured numerous African-American actors, including the title roles of Hamlet and Ophelia. She has directed plays by celebrated playwrights such as August Wilson. The Piano Lesson at Yale Repertory Theater in 2011 and Ruined. Oh, there's a bye in here that's missing. I apologize for that. Anyway, Yale Repertory Theater in 2011 and Ruined by Lynn Nottage at Berkeley Repertory Theater in 2011. One of her most well-known interpretations of a classical production was a version of Les Miserables at Dallas Center Theater she directed in 2014. The production included a racially diverse cast that challenged typical casting types and explored themes of African political demonstrations and social justice. Her resume encompasses a wide variety of plays, and Joan, if you could do me a reminder again when we go back, I would appreciate it. I'll just keep going until then. Her resume encompasses a wide variety of plays that put this philosophy into action. One of her latest productions, Eclipsed, written by Danai Gurira, which is her Walking Dead tie. Now we know how she got in here. Tells the story of five Liberian women trying to survive towards the end of the Second Liberian War. This production starred Lupita Nyong'o, and thank you, Lupita, for putting the pronunciation of your name on YouTube. That was super helpful. Very grateful. And became the first ever all-female cast play written and directed by a female to premiere on Broadway. Before its move to New York, Tommy faced criticism that Eclipsed was too similar to Ruined by Lynn Nottage. When Ms. Nottage saw the play, she agreed that there were similarities, but argued that it was as a whole, it was a completely different story about different women and completely different circumstances. In 2016, Tommy received a Tony Award nomination for directing for Eclipsed, making her the first African-American female director to have received a Best Directing nomination for a play at the Tony Awards. By the way, Liesl is the first Black woman to earn a Tony Award nomination for Best Direction of a Play, so hooray for her. In March 2018, Tommy was hired to direct Born a Crime, the film adaptation of the autobiography of the same name by Trevor Noah. Liesl will direct the life of Aretha Franklin with Jennifer Hudson in the title role. Hudson was the Queen of Soul's choice. The biopic will be named Respect. I will pause here because we are back. Thank you, Joan. See you guys at break four. Hey guys, 9:28, break number four. Let's get some scores up there. Joan and I are neck and neck, 6-7-5. Okay, Joan, were you expecting her to say who wants some cookies and they have almonds quote in them? Okay, so let's see. Joan has said, think Daryl will ever learn sign language. He already likes to gesture when he talks. That's true. You know what? If he starts hanging out with Connie a lot, I expect her to teach him a few signs because it seems like her group of buddies picks them up. So I kind of figure that's par for the course somehow. Okay, so looks like a whole new group of desperate assholes, these highwaymen. And she says, I love Carol. Yep, to all of these, all of the above. All right, let's go back to Tommy's bio. And let me see if I can figure out where I left off. Okay, yes, down at the bottom. In March 2018, Liesl Tommy was hired to direct Born a Crime, the film adaptation of the autobiography of the same name by Trevor Noah. I know I read this before, but I want to catch y'all up. Liesl will direct The Life of Aretha Franklin with Jennifer Hudson in the title role. Hudson was the Queen of Soul's choice for this pick. The biopic will be named Respect. In addition to developing and directing Frozen Live, the multimedia theater extravaganza adaptation of the Disney film for the Hyperion Theater in Disneyland, Tommy has also directed episodes of AMC's Walking Dead, HBO's Insecure, and OWN's Queen Sugar, created by Ava DuVernay. Liesl Tommy is a director known for The Walking Dead, and this is from IMDb, so this is strictly movie and TV work here. Born a Crime, the comedy in development, it hasn't been announced what year it'll come out yet, and Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, out in 2019. She has 7 TV and movie director credits, including tonight's show. Choke Point marks her first work with The Walking Dead franchise. Cookies. Carolyn can pull off a coup with just about anything, yeah. I was like, you know, would you like a movie? And if you try to kill me, I'm going to put you in a movie. And it'll be rated R for gore. Okay, so the writers. David Leslie Johnson. So David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick. And I took note that he professionally changed his name in IMDb a couple years ago. Spring of 2018. Began writing plays in the second grade. Oh, and we're back. I'll get back to David at break number 5. Thank you. Okay, guys, 9:38, break number 5. And Cinco is here. Oh, my God, yay! Let's give her some applause. Thank you. Joan has mentioned Lydia is seriously messed up. Her mother just threatened to kill her along with Henry at the end of last episode. Now she wants to defend her people. Well, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with people that have been abused in those kinds of situations, you know, where they're in relationship with their abuser. But this is very typical behavior of people like that. So it's unsurprising. It's just startling if you haven't been in that situation or familiar with it. Justice, looks like the movie offer works. I don't know if the movie did it, but, you know, maybe Carol said something else later, and here comes the highwayman, so on and so forth. Okay, yes, you must have missed quite a bit. Yeah, you did, Cinco, because we had the time change, so it's actually 20 minutes before the end of the show. But don't misunderstand, I'm super happy you're here. Well, I got a hot minute. Let me go ahead on to David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick's profile. Now, this is a name that would be familiar to you guys, because some of this is old news. Began writing plays in the second grade and wrote his first screenplay at age 19. Johnson attended Ohio State University in Columbus and graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in photography and cinema. Currently, Johnson lives in Burbank, California with his wife, screenwriter Kimberly Lofstrom Johnson, and their son Samuel. And I have yet to this day to figure out why he changed his name at the end to McGoldrick, because I now have his wife's name and it's not hers. So I don't know what's going on with that. So Johnson McGoldrick began his career as a production assistant on Frank Darabont's Shawshank Redemption, which was filmed on location in Johnson's hometown of Mansfield, Ohio, at the historic Mansfield Reformatory, where Johnson's great-grandfather had been a prison guard. Johnson spent the next 5 years as Darabont's assistant, using the opportunity to hone his craft as a screenwriter. He co-wrote the screenplay for the new Aquaman movie that came out in December 2018, which did so well that as of February 2019, he's already been hired to pen the script for the Aquaman sequel, which is due out in 2022. He wrote the script for 2016 sequel The Conjuring 2 and was brought back to work on current new sequel The Conjuring 3, slated for 2020. He's also listed as a main writer for The Nightmare on Elm Street 2020 reboot. Other future projects he is up to include a Dungeons & Dragons movie slated for 2021, another remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers slated for 2022. Joan, keep me on track as far as whether we're back. David has been involved with Walking Dead since 2011. He started as a writer for Season 2, Episode 5, Chupacabra, and has written 9 episodes of the show before tonight, the last previous one being the Season 9 mid-season finale, Evolution. That was his. He also had story by and teleplay by credits for 2017 Season 8, Episode 5, The Big Scary You. He's been a consulting producer for the entirety of Season 8 and now into Season 9. Tonight is his 10th episode written for the franchise, 11 if you also count The Big Scary You. Jonas said, I'm a little too familiar with how people act in abusive situations, and I realize Lydia is showing the symptoms, but still wish a death threat was enough to make her consider getting away. Well, I mean, she did consider it. She's with Henry, and, you know, when put to the test, she had a big quandary about it. Okay, so the other co-writer tonight, Eddie Gazalian, also a familiar name. Let's see if I can squeak this in. Eddie Gazalian's biography online is not very detailed. He is a writer and producer known for Blood Punch 2014, won the Hoboken International Film Festival 2014 Award, New Orleans Horror Film Festival 2014 Jury Award, and Dances with Films 2014 Audience Award. And we're back, so I'll tell you the rest when we get back at break number 6. Okay, guys, 9:52 p.m., break number 6. Let's go ahead and get some scores up. I'm going to 7-2-5. I did like the fight. I am a little disappointed that there wasn't more damage on Daryl's part. I did notice that we don't see Beta die. He's just got thrown down an elevator shaft. But let's see. Jonah said not just Beta either, so Lydia was only half right. Yeah, not quite an army, but not Beta alone either. Looks like that prediction may have some merit. Daryl's getting his butt kicked. Yeah, he kind of was. And that's to be expected. Beta is their best fighter. You know, you have your two warriors going at it. It's going to be a fairly even fight. Yeah, I bet he's not dead. So Jones is 7. I'm at 725. Senko, I don't know if you're watching, if you're just hanging out, because I know the time change was a bit of a shock. So if you're not watching, don't worry about scoring. If you are in a position to score, that's fabulous. If not, don't worry about it. So let's go back. 953, Eddie Gazalian's profile. I was naming off his awards for Blood Punch. So let's pick back up. Let's see. He's known for Blood Punch and the awards. And then the other movies he's known for are Power Rangers RPM from 2009 and The Penguins of Madagascar 2008, which was a Daytime Emmy nominee. Gazalian, who wrote family movies like Lilo and Stitch 2 and The Tigger Movie, ended up original showrunner for a languishing Power Rangers new Disney property franchise in the early 2000s. This is his fourth writer credit for the Walking Dead franchise, previously having written Season 8, Episode 11, Dead or Alive Or, and Season 8, Episode 14, Still Gotta Mean Something. I didn't catch what his third one was. I don't want to go back now, but I think that may be leftover stuff from the last time I mentioned him, which it would have been 3. He's also been executive story editor for 12 episodes over late Season 8 and so far all of Season 9. Jonah says, they can get so much more mileage out of Beta. I don't think they would kill him yet. I don't believe they're going to either. There was way too much hype about Ryan Hurst coming along. Okay, so trivia about tonight's episode. I don't have anything for tonight other than it's 128 and then the following parts. Uncredited cast, quote unquote. These guys are actually kind of credited, but not as fully as you would have expected. So co-star Ben Vandermeer, the actor, as Bitten Whisperer, who was bitten tonight. That's the guy that had the big wound in his neck, and then they ended up using him as a guardian later on. Co-star Terry James, with an I, female, as Whisperer number 6, female Whisperer tracker. That's the one that's helping Beta track where everybody is. Co-star Victor Cordova, the actor, as Warrior number 4, group and affiliation unknown. I'm unclear which character that is. Maybe we'll have more clarity on that later tonight. This is the first appearance of the Highwaymen, a new second antagonist who may have been won over by Carol. I'm not sure what happened with all that. Kind of funny. First appearance of Ozzy, leader of the Highwaymen, played by actor Angus Sampson. As of this episode, Daryl Dixon has officially surpassed Rick Grimes in number of appearances, making him the character with the highest number of appearances in the show. Plot theory. It is possible, though unconfirmed, that this was the group responsible for the disappearances of several Kingdom residents before the events of Who Are You Now? Since Jed claimed he only found their supplies. If this is the case, it's rather odd that they would just abandon these supplies, but it is possible they hid them, and Jed's group just happened to find them. The title of tonight's show is a callback to early seasons where Rick says both to Shane and to Daryl in various fight scenes that Choku hold is illegal. I have trivia for last episode. Joan, let me know when we go back. I'll try to get through what I can before we do. So, uncredited actors from last week. All of these are Alexandria residents. Tia Davis, Christopher Gaynor, Danielle Lyman, Laura L. Anderson Weber, Thomas Downing, Christina Cobbs, and Mason Beard, all Alexandria residents. Jimmy McCarthy as Alexandria guard. I'm going to give them a little applause for their role. We are back. See you guys at the end or at break number 7. I got some more stuff to read to you. Okay, guys, it's 10:01. We're going for final scores. I'm going to end on 7-5, same as Joan. Cinco says, I'm here for the spoilers because she's on PDT, of course. Joan says, for someone who can't hear, Connie sure uses sound to her advantage when herding real walkers. She uses sounds, but she doesn't hear them. I'm sure she figured out that she could, like, cause noises and find out where the walkers are. And she was also watching how they walk to see if any of them might be whisperers among them or something. Let me go back to my notes and see if I can just wrap up where I was. I'm going to go ahead and read to you guys the stuff from last week, if you want to stick around for a few minutes. So, deaths from last week, Helen and Sean, they were killed for challenging Alpha. Rasmus off-screen. He was a whisperer in 3 episodes, killed by Daryl or Connie during Henry's rescue. He was one of the guys that used their faces. They took his mask away and used that to come in. Whisperer guard number 1 was used by Walker Bait, by Daryl and Connie, and 3 other unnamed whisperers. First appearance of Beta, first appearance of Zion, first and last appearance of Helen and Sean, and last appearance of Rasmus. Jones going on to Talking Dead. Yes, let me run down real quick, and I'm sure you know already, but who is going to be on the couch is Lauren Ridloff, who plays Connie, Ryan Hurst, who plays Beta, and Talking Dead, hashtags, Ultimate Fan Search winner, Christy Ferguson. I'll go back and read you guys the rest of the stuff. Feel free to stay if you want. First appearance of the Whisperer's Camp last week. The title of the episode, Guardians, refers to how the Whisperers call the undead. As of this episode, Tom Payne, Paul Rovia, is removed from the opening credits. Very sad. We liked him. This is the 2nd episode since The Key to feature a fully nude Walker. Interestingly enough, both this episode and The Key are the 12th episode of their respective seasons. Starting with this episode, an additional Walker and a Whisperer are featured in the end of the show's opening sequence. Lydia flat out lies to Alpha about what she learned about the communities and claims that Hilltop doesn't trade with any of the communities. Henry has told Lydia about the kingdom, at least during Omega. It is also confirmed by Lydia that the Hilltop has been reduced to mainly melee weapons with only a few guns still in existence. And that was actually true. She could observe that herself. It's explained that Alexandria is ruled by its council, led by Gabriel Stokes, but they gave Michonne the power to veto their decisions based off security concerns. However, Michonne has been vetoing everything they decide lately based off security concerns. The council is revealed to have approved the relay project, but kept it from Michonne because they knew she'd immediately veto it. It's confirmed that Alexandria has taken in many residents after the sanctuary fell, with Michonne commenting to the council on how they opened the doors to the people of the sanctuary. The kingdom situation is confirmed to be dire, with Ezekiel having downplayed it in his letter, asking for Alexandria to come to the fair. Michonne admits that she is willing to take in the kingdom residents if need be. She later changes her mind and allows a delegation to be sent. Eugene confirms that he is in fact in love with Rosita, while her pregnancy by Sadiq is now common knowledge. It's revealed that there are in fact hundreds of whisperers. As of this episode, actor Marvin Lee, who has been a core Alexandria extra since season 6, has finally been given a name in the show, that being Kyle. Eugene talks to Gabriel about what they've been through and how Gabriel believed in Eugene when Eugene himself didn't, and, quote, even with bad peepers, saw things Eugene couldn't. This is a reference to their time with the Saviors when Gabriel continued to see the good in Eugene despite him being one of them. Dog not letting go of Daryl's arrow. This one's funny, so you guys should be glad you stick around for this one. And breaking it was originally not meant to happen, but Norman Reedus improvised and kept that team going by adding his line, bad dog. And I have to note that the actress who plays Connie also reacted, so good on both of those guys for keeping that going and not breaking character. This is the 3rd episode where a member of the antagonist group challenges the main antagonist for leadership, then is immediately killed by the main antagonist. The first was O'Donnell and Coda. He confronted Dawn Lerner, who, with the help of Beth Greene, defeated him. Beth ultimately killed him by pushing him down an elevator shaft. The second was Simon, who had an actual fist fight with Negan, only to lose the fight by Negan strangling him to death in Worth. The third in this episode is Sean and Helen. Both are killed by Alpha. Also, a few Savior extras were seen as Whisperers at the Whisperer camp. However, it is unconfirmed if any Saviors possibly joined the Whisperers during the time skip. So I don't know if that is just allowing people to do extras as other characters, which is not unheard of on this show, or if Saviors join them in character. There are no goofs, errors, or bloopers listed for last week. Cast birthdays for this week. Cooper gets an extra because his is on the 10th, so I read it both last week and this week. Cooper Andrews plays Jerry in The Kingdom, March 10th birthday from Smithtown, Long Island. John Reese Quiro, who played Jed, the Savior Splinter Group leader, his birthday will be March 12th. He is from Santo Stefano in Aspromonte, Calabria, Italy. Or it could be Calabria, I don't know. Sorry, pardon. And Greg Nicotero, producer, director of special effects, March 15th birthday, and he, of course, is from Pittsburgh, home of The Walking Dead, The Living Dead, and all of those things. There was no featured music identified. Unaccounted for characters. The only news is that that new article I read you guys last week from Digital Spy did some sloppy research because in Clear, Season 3, Episode 12, Morgan tells Rick that Jenny bit Dwayne, his wife, and Morgan did not put him down. He likely turned. Whereabouts are unknown in Atlanta. Oceanside, there's an article that I'm going to retain and read you guys next week. They are bringing Oceanside back. They'll be at the fair. Talking Dead tonight, I've already read to you guys. Back half of Season 9, the last three episodes, 14 is Scars. So I think the stuff that we saw previewing next week is going to have to do with a retro episode explaining the scars on Daryl and Michonne's back, and probably why Michonne has an attitude about some things, because apparently something happened during that storyline that really messed her up. So that is Scars. The writer is Michael Cudlitz. It's been revealed. Director is Millicent Shelton. I do not have writer and director for next after that, 15. The Calm Before still hasn't been announced. I'll see if I can find that before next week. And then the season finale, The Storm, writer is Angela Kang. Director will be Greg Nicotero, March 31st. Don't have a start date for Fear. I will mention, as we previously reported by The Inquisitor, there's been a new recent character announcement made for Fear Season 5. Actress Karen Davis will join the Season 5 cast as a character called Grace. No other news has been released regarding her character, although there is the potential that she could be an antagonist. All right, that's the last of my notes I wanted to get to you guys. Go enjoy Talking Dead. I appreciate you guys coming and spending time with me. Thank you very much. I'm going to give you some applause before we go because I appreciate you. All right, so hopefully we will see you guys next week. And thank you very much for hanging out with me and keeping me company. Take care. Good night.